McManaman again. On to Shearer. Now Barmby. Good football from England. Wise. Redknapp. Goodness me, have you ever seen anything like that in your life from a goalkeeper? That is quite the most remarkable piece of goalkeeping I have ever seen.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Yes, Terry DeFellin is speaking us live from Switzerland, where you've been holed up, haven't you, for the last 3 weeks, haven't you?
Have I?
Oh, come on, let's try and get some mystique going here. Let's try and get some international flavour going on. Okay, he's at home. You've got the lurgy, haven't you?
No, I've got a gammy foot, mate.
What?
I've got a gammy foot.
You've got a foot now?
And I thought, I'm not going to go and stand in a cramped studio for 45 minutes on my gammy foot.
It's not very cramped, though.
No.
I'm a little disoriented, actually, because I'm on the opposite side of the studio.
It's not cramped now, but it would be cramped if I were there.
No, Terry, don't put yourself down. I mean, like, you know, you've done really well, actually, and you've lost a lot of weight, and it's really showing, isn't it?
But he had a good Christmas.
Gout has obviously set in. Yeah. Still going through, battling through the pain.
He's a real pro.
Which is a lot more than what certain professionals would do.
Hmm.
But, hey, what a weekend it's been in football.
Yeah.
It was great, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, was it great?
Well, it was disappointing.
Yeah.
I only caught one game, and it was the Liverpool-West Brom game.
That
just made me seething with anger.
Which
I felt compelled to communicate to you.
that was a game, wasn't it? I was going to avoid football this weekend because obviously I had no interest in the FA Cup.
Yeah.
But none of us did. All our teams had gone out of it, as listeners will know from our podcast that we released a couple of weeks ago when we reported on the fact that all our teams had gone out. But yes, I watched that. I was in the pub, Terry and I, which is probably a good explanation to why Terry's got a gammy foot. We went to watch East Grinstead versus Whiteleaf, Whiteleaf won 8-1, and there were two sendings off in it.
Wow.
Two penalties as well, wasn't there?
It was a brilliant game. Well, it was a great game for us.
Yeah.
Not so good for the East Grinstead fans. They didn't enjoy it so much as we did.
No, there was the sort of rumbling of discontent in the crowd there from the home crowd. Yeah.
They weren't happy with the referee.
No.
For some reason.
I can't imagine why, considering that he gave us two penalties and he sent two of their guys off.
Yeah, I thought he had a great game.
I thought that everyone was spot on. Yeah. I'm really surprised he's refereeing at that level. I would have thought it would have been a good couple of divisions above, actually. And in fact, he had a better day. He had a better Saturday than Craig Pawson did, didn't he? Who was officiating at the West Brom-Liverpool game.
Yeah.
There was a lot of shenanigans there with the VAR, wasn't there?
There were, but I think it would be wrong to unfairly malign the referee. He's trying to do his best with a system they're just putting in, and it's a shit system as well.
Yeah, that doesn't help, does it?
No.
It doesn't help matters. I saw the match of the day highlights afterwards. And all the calls were pretty much correct, weren't they?
Yeah, from what I can remember, just for some reason it got people under the collar. I just think they just don't like it. I must confess, I didn't catch the highlights on match of the day. And my recollection of watching the match live is somewhat hazy.
Yeah.
Due to the celebrations from the aforementioned 8-1.
The whole thing about VAR now is taking a bit of a turn. We're not going to be talking about VAR this week, just because we do it quite a lot, so we'll let everyone else talk about VAR, and we're going to talk about something else. But before we go on to that, we will have to mention a couple of things about VAR, because the conversation for VAR now seems to be sort of going in the same sort of direction as staying in the customs union.
Yeah, that's an interesting analogy. I just think that people just don't like it. I just think that they think that it's just anti-football and it's just, you know, it's ruining everything. It's not having the effect that I think that people who thought it was a good idea thought it would have. I think that they thought that it would solve all the problems, genuinely. And I think that its proponents are, I think, in some quarters, genuinely shocked at the reaction. Because I think they thought, once it starts, people will just come to accept it. And, you know, everyone will be able to move on from this horrible debate. But in fact, people have just gone, this is rubbish.
Yeah.
Why are we doing this? And I think it's come as a bit of a shock. I also think that there are people, you know, analysts and commentators who haven't actually read the little bit of paper, the PDF from the FIFA website, as to when it works and when it doesn't work. Particularly one guy during a recent FA Cup game, which I had the misfortune of watching, was talking about situations saying, oh, the VAR is now talking to the referee to say that that corner was okay. He's like, no, that is genuinely not how it works. The guidelines for the VAR couldn't be simpler to understand, really couldn't be. So I don't think it helps by its accompanying narrative, which I think is confused.
Yes, yeah, it is. Well, we're going to keep our eye on VAR, and so should you, listeners. And if you have strong opinions about VAR, please do get in touch with us. And don't be afraid that we are very sceptical of VAR. We always have been. We were talking to a few listeners on social media over the weekend, during the evening. And yeah, we made our position abundantly clear.
When you say we,
I did.
I think you mean you, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
If you were talking to the Sound of Football's Twitter on during that game, then the person on Twitter was very drunk. In case you hadn't worked that much fast.
I was drunk on goals.
And beer.
Yes, I'd had a gallon of goals during the day. And pretty much a gallon of beer as well. Yes, yeah, okay. Well, all right, let's move on with the actual subject in hand for today. Now, today, Terry, you're the one who brought up today's subject because you decided to go from home. So I said, right, fine, you can sit this one into the comfort of your own home as long as you come up with a subject. So what did you come up with, Terry?
Well, I thought it was past time we had a conversation about goalkeepers.
It has been a while.
And I was struck by, actually, it was a tweet from David Harptrick, first of all, I think, who was criticising Jerry Armstrong for being, I may have this wrong, so apologies, David, if you're listening. In fact, hello, Dave, if you're listening. He was not happy that Jerry Armstrong seemed to be thinking that Leo Messi's goal against Alaves yesterday was world class, but that in fact there was a goalkeeping error, really, for the free kick that really contributed to the goal. And then I then saw this link and read this article on a well-known newspaper, its official website, a column by Mark Schwarzer about goalkeepers and goalkeeping punditry, and that how commentators don't really understand how goalkeeping works. And of course, that gave me some pause because I read through it, and he was talking about Simon Mignolet in particular, who gets an awful lot of stick for being a rubbish goalkeeper when in fact he's not. Now, I'm not going to disagree with Mark Schwarzer because, you know, he was the guy who was a goalkeeper for 22 years, and I've only kept goal in five-a-side teams to a relatively high standard, I should point out.
Nevertheless, pretty good.
I bet he is. Yeah.
I was pretty good. I won Goalkeeper of the Year so many times they ended up naming the award after me. But I mean, I really, I think that's as far as it goes. But it did give me pause as to whether or not, do we really fully understand what makes a good goalkeeper and what doesn't make a good goalkeeper? I mean, is Joe Hart really actually as bad a goalkeeper as people seem to say that he is? And, you know, Loris Karius at Liverpool as well, who gets an awful lot of stick for some of his mistakes that he's made. I mean, are they genuinely warranted? Are these just moments that we all remember? We always remember the really interesting, and I guess in that case, we always remember the really bad moments, don't we? But how many of the other moments do we either ignore because they're just not very interesting, or ignore because we don't actually know what they're doing? Because we just don't. We just haven't kept goal. We've not read the coaching manuals. I mean, I've never read a coaching manual on goalkeeping.
We'll talk about Simon Mignolet in depth later because obviously he played for your club for a while. And Liverpool snatched him away from you because they thought he was so good.
Yeah.
But yeah, do you think Terry's right there? Is there a lack of understanding about the position, or is it just because goalkeepers just cannot get away with their mistakes? Any other position on the field, a striker does an air shot and everyone laughs. but it's forgotten about pretty much in the next move.
Yeah.
The midfielders' passes go astray all the time, and defenders, you know, well, they're making mistakes all the time.
They're always making mistakes,
yes.
Defenders. Yeah, I think both is the answer. I think there is probably a lack of understanding. And you know, the number of pundits that are on there that are actually goalkeepers is, you know, and that's, you know, it's always going to be skewed towards outfield players because there's more outfield players employed in football.
Yeah.
So it's going to happen that way. But it's such a specialist role, and it's not like any other role on the pitch. And you think about all the other players, they could, to, you know, a greater or lesser degree, swap positions if they needed to, right? You've got to be able to kick a ball, all right? I mean, there's a lot more to it than that, but essentially you can move from striker to defender or whatever and just do a job if you have to do it. But to go in goal, I mean, do you remember when that used to have to happen? When that used to happen, when there was no goalkeeper?
Oh, yeah.
And it was just farcical that someone would go in goal and just bollocks the whole game up. and that's partly down to the crazy rule we had at the time where you couldn't have a reserve goalkeeper on the bench. So yeah, it is such a specialist role that that I think it makes it very difficult to, you know, accurately or with any degree of confidence comment on it, really.
I really miss the days of outfield players going in goal, don't you, Terry?
Yeah, I do. I think it's a genuine loss, and it's one of the things that I would probably bring back if I possibly could. My favourite was when Palace played Wimbledon and Nigel Martin was sent off and John Solarco had to go in goal, possibly one of the shortest guys on the pitch, and we won 3-2. It was amazing. In general, I think it's better for the overall health of the game if goalkeepers were replaced by goalkeepers.
Now, I do remember once in that sort of transition period where we had, I think you're allowed to name three substitutes, and one of them had to be a goalkeeper.
Yeah. And I remember when the Premier League started.
Yeah, and I remember Les Seeley coming out and playing as an outfield player for West Ham. I think it was. I think he was there at the time. And I think they'd made their two subs, and they lost another player. And the only other sub they had left on there was Les Seeley. And I think he came on and ran around for 20 minutes on the wing, I think. didn't do anything. I don't think he even got a touch of the ball. I don't think, which is probably for the best.
These are the kind of moments that make football so great. But in a professional environment, I suppose it's not really the done thing anymore, is it, sadly?
So, do you think, though, that we don't get as many pundits who are goalkeepers just because of the numbers, i.e. like 1 in 11 players are goalkeepers, so 1 in 11 pundits will be goalkeepers? Mm. Is the maths that cut and dried?
Yeah, I think it's partly that. I think it's also because for some reason it's not seen as being a specialised position, even though it is very clearly a specialised position. I just think it's probably just convention. I mean, these days they get referees involved in punditry now, don't they? They usually get, you know, Howard Webb, and was it these days it's Graham Poll who does work for BT, you know, try and what's his name? Dermot Gallagher turns up on Sky Sports News on Monday to talk about refereeing decisions to help supporters understand why referees make terrible decisions, and then, you know, sticks up for them. That's a very specialist position on the pitch, but the goalkeeper doesn't seem to enjoy that same status. I'm struggling to actually think of a goalkeeper who is a regular pundit. I'm sure there are, and I'm sure I just can't think of one.
Well, I'm trying to think. I know of irregular ones. People like Peter Schmeichel used to come on, especially during international tournaments. Mm. He's usually around. Peter Shilton used to turn up occasionally to do punditry.
Right.
But, you know,
that's really going back.
And he's not very interesting, so that's probably why he doesn't get invited back.
But obviously, these days, Mark Schwarzer is does a bit of punditry. Doing a lot more, and I'm sure one of the reasons why he wrote the article was presumably to pitch for more work, which is completely reasonable, totally great way of raising awareness and getting people talking. But I think also it's probably maybe goalkeeping or pundits that were goalkeepers sort of like don't want to just be like, oh, right, I'm the goalkeeper guy. You just want me to come on and talk about goalkeepers. Oh, you know, you don't want me to talk about outfield play because, you know. So it could be a reflection of the odd relationship that the goalkeeper has with outfield players. And we all know you don't have to have played football at professional level to know that, you know, the relationship between the goalkeepers and outfield players, you know, they're a different breed. It's an old stereotype. but there is a kind of a thing going on there, perhaps a degree of insecurity about goalkeepers. And they think, well, I just don't want to talk about nothing but goalkeepers. But actually, maybe there would be some value in getting guys like Schwarzer on. And maybe, and David Priest is another one. I think he's a journalist now, but he's well, obviously only recently stopped being a goalkeeper. I've listened to him talk about goalkeeping, and I've learned more about goalkeeping by listening to him for, say, 2 or 3 minutes than I would have done really. And to be brutally honest with you, with, you know, quite a few years of watching goalkeepers play football, because which I have done, but without any sort of points of reference about what is good and behavior, good practice and what isn't. You know, you tend to just get an instinctive idea about whether or not a goalkeeper can be disappointed with that. You know, the whole thing like conceding at your near post, or you don't like being conceding at your near post. But sometimes that just happens, you know. And like, how much of it is down to the positional work player or the outfield player? Your outfield players are wrongly positioned, and a goalkeeper has to take a step or two steps in the wrong direction because he's trying to compensate his angle, trying to adjust his angles, but all making up the decisions. And then next thing he knows, he gets done at his near post. How much of that is actually a goalkeeping error? How much of that is a centre half or a defensive cover player's error? Now, all this stuff is quite interesting to me, and I'm not quite certain that it's sort of like fully explained. And I do wonder whether or not sometimes goalkeepers are unfairly maligned by people who don't know better. I think that Mark Schwarzer has a point.
Do you think, though, that just trying to... I think what Terry said is perfectly valid, but if you think about it from a broadcaster's point of view, you know, all the action is out on the pitch. A goalkeeper can have a kind of all right game and probably still be on the losing side, and no one's going to point the finger at him. It's not until there's a big blooper that's when there's a problem. So, you know, to have a punditry team or have someone on standby to cover off on those, you know, occasions, maybe they may see it as overkill. I don't know. But it is down to the bloopers that people remember goalkeepers for, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's not massively fair, because, you know, you do have goalkeepers that, you know, make fantastic saves or famous saves. Yeah. Dave Besson did it in the FA Cup all those years ago and things like that. And that, you know, the fact that I've just said that shows how famous that is, because it sticks in my mind. You know, you talked about Mingele before. He gets caught up a lot by the pundits and the press for making bloopers.
Yeah.
And so does Joe Hart, as Terry mentioned before. And yeah, they sometimes make mistakes and make bloopers.
Mm.
But it's, as you said, it's so magnified for those guys. When they make a mistake, it's, you know, potentially catastrophic for the game, because they lose a goal or goals, or and that can affect the spirit of the team and the motivation and the rhythm of their play, and it can have all sorts of consequences. But that's why they're probably the bravest guys that walk onto the pitch, isn't it? Because they're willing to expose themselves to that kind of pressure and potential ridicule. I think they're a brave bunch.
Yeah, you consider the goalkeeper probably has had the hardest time of things like the back pass rule. When the back pass rule was introduced, goalkeepers were able to pick the ball up beforehand when the ball was passed them. And then it completely changed the game when they couldn't pick the ball up. And so they then had to do something with it. So, obviously in the early days, they just got rid of it. But these days, goalkeepers are now expected to become partial outfield players, and they have to do something, you know, useful or valuable with the ball when they are in possession of it. And in fact, they probably have possession of the ball an awful lot more now than they used to. And possibly, I wonder whether or not there's some instances where they have more possession of the ball than some outfield players in some instances, in some games, because particularly if they're playing quite defensively or if they're sitting quite deep, they probably see the ball quite a bit more, because that's, you know, they're the last line of defence. There's a chap at Dortmund, Roman Bürki, who took an awful lot of stick, still gets stick as well, in fact, for some of the mistakes that he made earlier in the year. But his coach was basically encouraging them to play the ball from the very, 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 very back, i.e. him, the goalkeeper. And he had to set these moves off. And oftentimes he would just make the wrong decision when passing a ball to a fullback or to a centre half, playing to a player who doesn't have the right amount of space, and calamity would sometimes ensue. Very rarely, but of course, these are the things that you remembered for. He ended up getting stick from fans for doing it, but really, it's kind of slightly above his grade, arguably. You know, I mean, they can't all be Manuel Neuer, if you're going to set up your team to play that way, then you have to make certain that you've got a goalkeeper that can do that, which is why Joe Hart was booted out of City, because Guardiola had had 3 years of Manuel Neuer and went, well, no, I want a ball-playing goalkeeper. I don't want a you know, whatever Joe Hart is. Yeah. Well, that isn't necessarily a criticism of the goalkeeper.
No, I think, especially now, because we're all a lot more aware of statistics in the game and the amount of saves that that players make and the ratio of saves to shot. Also, with XG coming into it, we've got another way of analysing how good a goalkeeper is. Or do we? Do we actually see that? Or do we see how well a side defends as a unit? And I think that's what you see. I mean, these goalkeepers are very well trained. They only do one job, and that is to stop the ball from going in the back of the net, or that's what their primary job is. But of course, they do have to be involved with distribution. They do have to be involved in marshalling their defence to make sure that shots just don't happen. I think the probably the best exponent of goalkeeping we've probably seen in the last 30 years in England was Peter Schmeichel. Hmm. Now, Peter Schmeichel was a great shot stopper. It was a huge guy. And did do a lot of really good saves, but he couldn't jump. He couldn't jump to save his life. I mean, a lot of his worst reel is basically him being chipped.
Yeah.
By world class strikers.
By Davor Šuker
being one of them. Yeah. That's
he was
one
on
of
his arts.
Yeah.
Didn't we all laugh at that?
We all laughed at that one. But of course, the key thing that I remember most about Peter Schmeichel was him barking at Gary Pallister and Steve Bruce in front of him, telling them where they should be. And actually, the indignation he used to show whenever he had to save a shot. And also, as well, his distribution was incredible. Now he came from a background in handball, and basically, when he had the ball, if you're too young to remember Peter Schmeichel when he was playing, he would bowl it out. It would throw it overarm, one-handed, and it would get to the halfway line where Ryan Giggs, Andrei Kanchelskis would get hold of the ball, run up and score, basically. And that route out for United was what helped them win so much stuff in the 90s, because he was at the back, he was marshalling the defence, and also he stopped the odd shot or two.
It's quite rare, though, for a goalkeeper to be, not just like Schmeichel, I mean, because he was a rare talent.
Yeah.
The expectation now is that keepers should be able to do more of those things. But I think the reality is that a lot of these guys came through when that wasn't expected. So they learned their trade. Yeah. And now suddenly, because Pep says that Joe Hart isn't good enough for his style of play, and who am I to criticise him? But Joe Hart didn't stop being a good goalkeeper overnight. He just became not good enough for the style of play that Pep had brought over with him, and that everyone is now trying to copy. And I think that's actually his comments alone probably the reason that Joe Hart's stock has dropped so much.
Yeah, well, I suppose it doesn't help when you can't hold down a place in West Ham, so that doesn't really help matters at all.
I think that's telling, Graham, because I mean, if David Moyes is not picking him, I think that's telling you quite a lot about where Joe Hart is in terms of his general form. Not being able to offer a complete package for a guy like Pep Guardiola is one thing, but then for West Ham to look at him and feel they're better goalkeepers on our roster than he, because I mean that's why you drop Joe Hart. I mean, he's an England goalkeeper, he's an Englishman playing in the English league. They're totally giving the benefit of the doubt, and my impression of a guy like Moyes is he would totally give Joe Hart the benefit of the doubt. And he's not picking him. I, from what I've heard about what people have said about his time in Torino, is that there is a pretty fundamental flaw with his footwork, particularly in terms of balls, wider balls coming in high and over him, but a little bit like Schmeichel, I guess.
Yeah.
And that he can be vulnerable, and he can't see balls as they're coming into him from quite high. Obviously, dominating your box, particularly your 6-yard box, is something that a modern goalkeeper has always had to do. And this, I think, I get the impression is something that is eluding him. So I'm afraid, unfortunately, for Joe Hart, it's not good for him, which is obviously a shame for him personally, and a shame for anyone who follows England, because you know I don't think that Gareth Southgate is minded to replace him.
I believe that's the thing, though, isn't it? Because the show rule for a goalkeeper is always going to be those leaping saves that tip things over the bar, and rather than being able to manage the whole of the last third of the pitch.
Yeah, be interesting to see if there are statistics for box management.
My word.
So it's taken a turn for the odd now, hasn't it? It's interesting because, Graham, you very kindly shared a web page from the good people of Facts and their stats, which is very good. And it's got goals against, it's got shots. It's a list of goalkeeping stats in the Premier League. And the metrics include goals against and shots on goal, obviously towards them, the goalkeepers, shots against, saves that they've made, clean sheets.
Yeah.
And this tells you some story, but what it doesn't tell you about their positional awarenesses. It doesn't tell you about their box management. It doesn't tell you about the role that they play in organising a defence in front of them that actually prevents goals from coming your way to begin with.
But yeah, on that list there, you've got probably the two best goalkeepers in the, who are playing in England at the moment, David De Gea and Thibaut Courtois. But you can tell something from these statistics because you look on these lists and you see that both De Gea and Courtois have conceded 16 goals this season. But when you look in the amount of saves, you can see that De Gea has saved almost twice as many as Courtois, which is utterly phenomenal. And we do know that De Gea is having an absolute tear of a season with his saves against shots ratios. I think it's 5 points clear of anything that's ever gone before in these statistics.
Yeah, he's certainly making an impact. But as you said, I mean that is quite striking, that number. But what that doesn't tell you, what we all know is that Manchester United are not having the finest season ever. So he's a busy boy because they're not doing too well.
Yeah, I mean, if you look on the XG tables, they go deeper into this. They don't just count XG; they've got X points as well, expected points table. And on the expected points table, Man United are sixth, and that's where they would be if the XG and the XG for and XG against actually influence results. They'd be sixth, and Palace would be seventh.
Yes.
Now, of course, now a lot of people are going to be listening and thinking, right, well, that tells me everything I need to know about XG, doesn't it? But I think that's actually very useful because that actually says to me, that confirms everything that I've thought about Man United this season. I've seen them play against Arsenal, saw them against Tottenham and Liverpool. And each one of those, you thought, well, they've taken points from these games. They've stolen points from these games. Mm. I mean, against Arsenal, they went two goals up and deservedly went two goals up very, very, very quickly. But afterwards, they survived the barrage. De Gea saved 14 shots, equaled a record held by one of your goalkeepers, Vito Benoni.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was busy in his time at Sunderland as well.
And when you see the figures when it's painted like this in XG for the whole season, you start getting the sort of feeling about the general feeling of, well, Man United have been riding their luck. They should have conceded 29. That's what it says here, when they've actually conceded 16. And that can't be just De Gea just being that much better as a goalkeeper than anyone else. I mean, yes, he's having a great season, but you must think that the chances that teams are having, and I know XG is meant to bear this in mind, but it only really tells you from position rather than the actual game situation, so you can't really tell anything more from that. And I think it would be impossible to be able to tell that.
Well, looking at another example, there would be Nick Pope at Burnley. He's made 66 saves so far this season.
Yeah.
Ninth overall in the table that you've provided us with.
Yeah.
You go all the way. If you're looking for expected points on that table, then you have to go down to third from bottom before you find Burnley.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if you look at their shots conceded table for this season so far,
Now
Burnley are like first or second or perhaps third in terms of number of shots conceded. They're doing it right in terms of they're not conceding that many goals, and on average, you'll get points by doing that. But they are, I think, that can't just be, that's not just down to being, say, for example, an outstanding goalkeeper. that's down to good defending. And also you'd have to say it's down to luck. There has to be down to luck to have to be in that position. If these XG points mean anything at all, then there has to be a healthy slice of luck for Burnley, who, you know, and then you have to wonder, looking forward into the future, whether that luck will hold out for the entirety of the season.
Yeah, I think that's that has shown up there, because I mean these figures for XG, of course, you know, a lot of people still don't hold out too much expectations for this, but they've conceded 21 goals, and the stats say they should have conceded almost 33 goals. I love this because, you know, obviously it doesn't mean anything really, but it does sort of give you that impression that it's well, actually, yeah, Burnley have really put in a lot of back to the wall performances this year and got results from seemingly nothing. Not because they played better football than the opposition, but because they survived games. And I suppose the quality of your goalkeeper and a huge slice of luck is always going to have some influence on that.
I mean, it's interesting because you say these statistics maybe sell people who maybe don't find them useful. I find a great deal of comfort in them as a Palace fan, because I see us in that seventh in the round, and that reaffirms my belief that this is a team that has been playing well under itself and has been hampered by that dreadful start of the season. Were I a Swansea fan, I would be looking at that where they're bottom of that, or a Bournemouth fan, or a Huddersfield fan, or dare I say a Brighton fan, then I would be concerned because their XG points is down at the bottom end of that table. And that would be a worry for me, because not so much Brighton, but certainly Huddersfield, Bournemouth, Swansea, they are very much in that equation, as they say.
So, okay, let's round this up here and let's celebrate goalkeeping. Terry, who's been your favourite goalkeeper for your club?
Well, it's a difficult one because, I mean, like, when I was a kid, I was a big fan of John Burridge because he was just so flamboyant as a goalkeeper. But we also had Nigel Martin, who I think was probably, you know, maybe our best goalkeeper. I think the common feeling is that it's either Nigel Martin or a guy called John Jackson, who was before my time, but I've seen on telly on the big match and that. And he was a phenomenal goalkeeper. But I'm going to go with Julian Speroni, unsurprisingly. I mean, because he's been with the club for so long. He is not our best ever goalkeeper. And he did and has made mistakes. He's also done some wonderful things. And in general, he's a bit of a servant and, you know, very much, a local lad now, even though he's from Argentina. But you know what I mean.
Of course.
So I'm going to go with him because I've got so many fond memories of watching him play. And so it would have to be for me Julian Speroni at Crystal Palace.
Jan?
Well, when I first started going to watch Sunderland play, there was a fine goalkeeper called Tony Norman. The only drawback for Tony Norman was that he was a Welsh international at the same time as Neville Southall. So he really didn't have a chance to shine at that level. But he was a fine, fine goalkeeper. I really rated him. And then we had, not immediately afterwards, but some years afterwards, we had Thomas Sorensen, who I thought was brilliant as well. And, of course, Simon Mingele, who I thought was brilliant. And still think is brilliant. And I'd have him back tomorrow. but my favourite out of all those three, probably Sorensen. I thought he was a beast. Yeah. A really great goalkeeper.
Yeah, when I first started going to Arsenal, Pat Jennings was our goalkeeper, and I thought he was immense.
But a great keeper.
But later on, obviously Dave Seaman was there for years, great to watch, for comedic value as much as anything, you know, in later years. But my favourite, I think, has got to be Jens. Yeah, Jens Lehmann.
He was
brilliant. And I know that may surprise a few Arsenal fans, but I loved him. And I'm glad he's back at the club now, actually. So yes, Jens Lehmann. Right, well, Terry, it's your turn for the box set this weekend.
Yeah, it is indeed. It's my turn for the box set. And, well, there's some fairly eye-catching games to look forward to. I think the one that I'm looking forward to the most is, unsurprisingly, is Cologne versus Dortmund. That's got so much.
That's on Friday, isn't it?
Both ends. That's on the Friday. So much riding on it from both ends of the table. So much to look forward to there. Of course, Crystal Palace are playing Newcastle United on Sunday. So for me, a lot of personal interest there. On a more broader level, I think people will look forward to Liverpool versus Tottenham Hotspur, so I shall probably give that one a go. And there's Espanyol v Barcelona.
Ooh, yeah.
Alaves gave Barcelona quite a hard time on Sunday.
They did. A bit of a scare there, wasn't there?
Yeah, yeah. And I wonder whether or not there might be something there for Espanyol. Then I don't mean they're quite as good, but I wonder whether or not there might be something there. So yes, that's all 7 games in total will be previewed by me in an email sent to your inbox for absolutely free.
Yes, so get along to tinyletter.com/soundoffootball and subscribe. Yeah, do it. Do it now. Right now. But that's all we've got time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFillon, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @SoundOfFootball, or on Facebook.com/SoundOfFootball.
You know, Hutt, to be honest with you, you don't kick well, you don't dribble well, but you could be a good goalkeeper. Keep trying.
Thanks a lot.